Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can all go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to watch movies and series and talk about them with my friends that work here. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop. Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV? How's it, chaps?
Yo.
Hey, Russell.
What's going on?
You know, yeah, good.
Nice and chilly, keeping warm with some coffee.
Lovely. Welcome to the video store. Thank you for wandering in to our video store. Today we got Perrin.
Hello.
P-Dog.
Yay.
Who, we're not working at the video store, is an editor.
Yeah, and videographer.
Yeah.
I know cinematographers are going, they're scoffing hearing that videography.
But you own it. You own the fact that you
Yeah, I had to pivot. Yeah, and like I'm learning.
As opposed to a cine.
Yeah. No, I'm
it's
learning
such a wanky term.
Cool.
Cine, D-O-P.
Did that come afterwards? Is like editing your main thing and you just like,
no, I studied writing and directing. So my main thing is writing. But yeah, I had to pivot in my career, and editing and videography helped me learn more things.
Like Ross said, you just got to pivot.
Yeah.
Pivot.
Yeah. We got Gaddy here, who we're not working at the video store, makes the most delicious candy.
Mm. Well, thank you, Russell.
The Gaddles Candy Company. And he also plays in Short Straw with me. And for myself, when I'm not working at the video store, I'm the owner of The Bioscope, which is a cinema here in Joburg.
That's where I know you from.
And limited edition.
And limited edition.
Fantastic t-shirt.
Yeah, thank you. I'm just trying to give people context, because I realize we just start and go, hey, what's up?
Hey, dude. Oh,
and
good.
I think
the Oaks.
I think having people...
Having
people know some context. Yeah. And also for those who tune in and walk into our video store every week, we took a little break last week. I hope you didn't miss us too much. Well, I hope you missed us. I don't understand the joke, but I'm trying to set up. But more like we're back. I went to Amsterdam for about sort of 5 or 6 days with my lover.
my fiance.
Yeah. So I want to talk about that because I saw some really cool film stuff.
Yeah, man.
While I was there. And I arrived back in time for us to watch Twisters, which was cool. We went on IMAX on Thursday. As I arrived, I was still like running on fumes after this trip. Yeah. But that just shows you some dedication. I came back and we all went and watched Twisters. But what was special about that was that we had lots of listeners and friends join us for that screening, which was really cool. So thank you to everyone who participated in our giveaway. It was lovely to meet you all, and it was great to have you watch Twisters with us, which is now in cinemas. And so we're going to get into that.
Yeah. So you know, after Barbie came out, like someone released one of those fake, whenever Marvel do their releases, and like the continuity. So it's like the whole universe of games and board games. Yeah. And I can imagine like a Twister, like the game Twister, making a movie version of that.
That's what they did, didn't they?
Probably, you know, like,
isn't that what this is?
Yeah. My girlfriend, she, one of the best things I've ever heard her say, and it took me a moment to get it, is that I was like, oh, we should watch Twister. Well, this was like months ago. We should rewatch Twister. And she's like, when Helen Hunt put left hand on red, my heart stopped. Like, amazing. So yeah, they should make Twister the movie. Not Twisters.
There's a murder mystery.
Yeah. Directed by Rian Johnson. Yeah.
Lovely. So what I want us to do is I want us to have an inaugural game today, which is something that I hope we can often do here at the video store, which is to play a game I'm calling, Hey, Have You Guys Seen? And what we're going to do is it's effectively a lightning round of quick newsy type info that we want to share with each
other. Feels like a Mexican standoff right now.
We've all got our phones up. We're like, who's going to get there first?
Spider-Man.
I think you start, Perrin.
Okay. I have options over here. So Gladiator 2 trailer.
You got to start with, hey, did you guys see?
Sorry. Okay. Did you guys see the Gladiator 2 trailer?
I did.
What did you think?
I,
Yeah, Denzel with her New York accent is interesting.
I'm walking you. and sort of like a pretty hardcore like rap song.
Yeah, like I
Kendrick.
I was
it mentioned Coliseum, so they slapped it on because Denzel's in the movie.
But I don't know why. But Ridley Scott trailers have been doing that lately. Like Napoleon had a really bad Radiohead cover in it, where I was just like, ugh.
That seems to be the trend at the moment, is to do like a...
But like period films, and they're like, we're cool, we're edgy.
Yeah.
I don't think that these directors have got anything to do with these trailers.
But yeah, I get you. But it just like the trailer looks cool, but I feel like it was just too long and it felt like it gave away everything, you know?
Interesting.
But, yeah.
All right, next one.
Have you guys seen the trailer for Agatha All Along?
I did, actually.
Agatha All Along.
So this is a spin-off of WandaVision.
Yeah.
Which was a Marvel Universe TV show.
Okay.
So she was a character who kind of became like a witch.
Mm.
She was a cop and then she got possessed. So the whole idea of WandaVision was that she hypnotized this whole town into believing that they were in...
Like a TV show.
A TV show, and it kept on changing. Each episode is a different kind of decade. It went into Malcolm in the Middle, which is like my favorite.
Yeah, it was very creative. It was very cool. Yeah.
So now Wanda is dead and Vision is dead. Well, is Wanda dead?
I don't think so.
I don't know. Yeah. It's all
but is this
there.
A TV show?
This is a TV show. So this has been like in... They've been making it for ages and it's gone through like 10 title changes.
Yeah.
And it's now called Agatha All Along.
Yeah, so basically it's a spin-off of the one of the main antagonists in that show. And she's waking, she's trapped in this world that Wanda has like put her in. You know what I mean? So she's like waking up now.
Who's the main character?
It's Agatha.
What's the actor?
What's her name? She's a comedian.
Oh, she's that person who's like always the friend or...
I'll get to you now.
Okay. Gad, you do the Googling of today's episode. I will move on.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, did you guys see that Devil Wears Prada is getting a sequel?
I did.
What?
I haven't seen the original.
So
I don't know if it's necessary. What do you think?
Well, I scour bookstores to find the books that we sell in the gift shop.
Is it based on a book?
Well, the author has written sequels.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And so it'd be interesting to see whether or not it's based on those books.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
Catherine Hahn is...
Yeah, Catherine Hahn, that's it.
Let me show him a picture.
It looks fun.
She's the girl in that meme. It's like doing the
finger
point.
Oh, she's amazing. Yeah. Oh, she's top class.
Yeah.
She was that... she was the political advisor
in Parks and Rec. Yeah, where she hates kids. And she wears like ponchos and stuff.
Yeah, she's lovely.
Yeah.
Okay, next one.
Did you guys see that Euphoria is returning to production for season 3? I'm very excited about that.
Okay.
Did you guys ever get into Euphoria?
I never did. It was always a bit too depressing for me.
It is a bit hard.
Did I watch one episode? I couldn't. Also too heavy for me.
Yeah, so season 2 was good. Season 3, so I didn't think it would happen because Sam Levinson, the creator... After season 2 ended, like, everyone was just too hot and popular. So, like, schedules changed. It also, the writer's strike came into effect. So, season 3 was delayed by, like, 3 years. Mm. And he made the abysmal The Idol. Holy shit.
That was horrible.
Show.
Is it the same showrunner?
Same showrunner. And he's a bit... I'm not a big fan of Sam Levinson, but I like Euphoria. So, it'll be interesting. I think so. The full cast is coming back, which is also interesting.
So, that cast is huge. It's Sydney
massive.
Sweeney, it's Zendaya.
Jacob Elordi. Those are like their three big pools, right?
Is it A24 as well?
Yeah, in co-production with HBO. So, I'm interested to see what's going to happen because I know he wanted to make it a 5-year jump ahead.
Kind of needs to.
It needs to.
They're going to age a lot.
To be honest, because I didn't think it was coming back. I thought season 2 was the end of it because of just scheduling conflicts. Sam Levinson is a bit weird.
Why do you keep saying he's weird? Is he like creepy dude?
He's a bit of a creepo. And also like there's just a lot of weird on-set stories that I've heard.
Yeah,
where
creepo.
Yeah, like he doesn't get... Like he'll write characters out just because he doesn't like the actor for some reason.
Okay.
But then season three, I think, to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if that's the final.
Yeah.
Like it's done.
How many episodes were in each season? Because could this be like a bit of a limited series?
It was like 8 or 9 per season.
Okay. Yeah. So is it actually effectively a limited series that sort of keeps coming back?
Because they're going to be out of high school now. They're going to be adults. But yeah, it'll be nice to see how they wrap up everyone's stories or continue it.
Cool. Yeah. Gaddy, you got another one?
I'm going to steal Perrin's one from earlier. Did you guys see that Trump got shot?
That was an interesting one. It was an interesting thing to wake up to.
We were watching TV, and what were we watching? We were watching Hackers. Rewatching Hackers. Cool. And Kira was like, she's like, wait, I need to Google to check if this is actually a thing. And she's like, Trump just got shot. And then we changed it over to the news, and we obviously saw those pictures where the far right are going to, like, idolize now of him pumping
his fist.
Yeah,
this is kind of scary, like, what's going to happen. Because all I saw was, you know, the fact that it grazed his ear.
Yeah.
And then I saw that he sort of was still able to give a fist.
Fight. He was shouting,
and then,
fight.
And then I thought, oh, God, I wouldn't put it past him to have made this a, you know, a
PR stunt.
A PR stunt, you know. But it was, other people died, right?
Yeah, other people died. We thought that initially, and then when we heard that, we're like, oh, yeah, it's probably not.
Well, definitely the shooter, and then there was one person behind him.
Yeah, three people in total were injured, I think.
He got shot in the middle of going on about how he's going to deport every Mexican and, like, non-US citizen.
Yeah, I know, it's scary, but it's like, when we get a Trump biopic, this will make an interesting point in the story. This is like the sort of second act inciting incident or second act turning point.
Isn't it coming soon?
Yeah, Sebastian Stan is playing Donald Trump.
Sure, but it's a bit...
That's in like the Apprentice era. That's like way before. Yeah.
That was a film that came out in Cannes, right?
I think so, yeah. Yes, it did. Yeah, I think it got sold at Cannes. Yeah.
Yeah, so we can make stuff now, but history will be... interesting in sort of 20, 30 years' time when they make a Trump biopic then.
Yeah.
Because then we'll have a bit more clarity. The dust will have settled. We'll have seen the wood from the trees. And we're living in history. It's amazing.
It's scary because, like, I mean, we were chatting about it briefly before we started. And, like, I think it's... I still don't think he's going to win the election. I think it's just going to radicalize his fan base even more so.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, we were talking about how, like, because, Gad, you think the Democrats are screwed because of this now. Do you think Trump's going to win?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I really want to believe he's not going to. But,
but
with the way things are going with Biden, there's, like...
So, yeah.
I think there's just going to be the lowest voter turnout in history.
Yeah, that's what could win Trump the election. Like, so, like, the scary thing is like, we were talking about how, like, Trump's first term was chaotic because they didn't expect to win. So, like, they were, like, scrambling the whole time.
Yeah.
This time it's going to be scarier if he does win because they've got a plan in place. That Project 2025 is, like, Gilead blueprint.
Terrifying.
Blueprint. It's insane.
Gilead blueprint.
Yeah. Like,
oh, that's a Handmaid's Tale reference.
Yeah. So, like,
deportation of all illegals. Yeah. Like, they're going to make abortion.
They want to, like, ban... They want to ban pornography. They want to...
it is scary.
Like, divorces, you can only get a divorce if someone finds a fault in someone. So you can't just divorce. You have to, like, come with terms that they agree with.
Okay, oh, this is liable
for divorce.
This is the Republicans putting together a plan.
Yeah, for the next 4 years and
Trump
beyond.
Trump denied knowing about.
Which is insane.
And then now he's actually appointed people on his staff from the Project 2024 bill.
There's people on that staff who are, like, openly racist, misogynistic, anti-Semitic, like, sexist, you know.
But also, like, a big plan is that they're going to kick out all the Democratic appointed positions in government that wouldn't necessarily, like, disappear when changes over, but they're going to insist that happens.
There's a lovely Last Week Tonight about it.
Yeah, I watched that as well. Yeah,
and it's about the fact that in a... civil servant job.
Yeah.
There's a handful of people who are just there because they've got a job.
Oh.
They're not affiliated with Democrats or Republicans. They wouldn't change office and they wouldn't leave their jobs depending on whether a Republican or a Democrat is in power. They are just civil servants.
Yeah.
And this bill, if it takes power and comes into power, this bill can change that, and these people can lose their jobs, and other people can be appointed.
Yeah, there's like a loyalty thing as well involved with it. Like,
and so it's scary because then now you're going to put people in power that have an affiliation to a particular party. Oh, it's scary.
It's terrifying.
You're talking about Handmaid's Tale, which was a very famous book, which became a really great series, and it was a very scary show because it's set in the now, where America turns into this religious fundamentalist thing that turns into this nightmare where they basically dial back 100 years or whatever to women being servants to men, and it's a scary.
I mean, another scary story. They also want to ban contraceptives. Just one of the things. Like, that's insane. Like,
it's so stupid. And in 2024, you think it's baffling, but then that's the premise of Handmaid's Tale. Like, that's baffling then, but it happens.
But that's the thing. Like, we were talking about Civil War recently, right? The movie, and how a lot of people are like, "Oh, it's too far fetched. There's not enough context and stuff like that." Shit that is happening now is like one step closer to that actually happening, you know? Because
it is wild.
If Trump wins, it's going to be a fucking shit show. If Trump loses, it's going to be a shit show. Because I mean, it just blows my mind that
I don't think it would be a shit show if he loses.
I think
still have Biden in power.
Yeah,
but Biden, in my opinion, has still got a great sort of
he's got a great team,
great brain, and great foresight, but he is old.
He is old, so when you
put him under the stress of talking and debating, he's not going to be this vicious, articulate person, but his compass is in the right direction, and if you give him time, like, he'll set a course. But let's not talk about this for too long. Whose turn is it?
I think I can Gad.
Go.
Oh, it's
Trump. Hey, did you guys see the trailer for F1?
I think it looks great. Like,
did I see that?
Okay, so for the last,
you disagree?
No, it is cool. For the last,
it's awful.
The last few months, I'm just giving context. So for the last few months, if you are a Formula One fan, you've known that they have been shooting a movie.
Yeah.
That stars Brad Pitt, that is set around the world of Formula One. I thought it was just a Hollywood production.
Yeah.
I had no idea until I saw this trailer that it is an official Formula One movie.
And it's done by the guy who did Top Gun Maverick, so it should be fucking wild.
No. But
it costs $300 million. Jesus.
But it's made by and for Formula One. The agency, the entity, the conglomerate, the business.
So
that
crazy.
Is Formula One. So it is their movie, which is really interesting. And I don't think that's really happened before, where like the NFL have made a movie.
Yeah, that's true. That's very
NBA
true.
NBA have made an official movie.
Yeah.
So this is interesting.
That is very interesting.
That's what makes this one a little different.
I'm just curious
to
see.
And it also explains why it's had this fucking crazy budget.
Yeah, I'm also curious to see, because it looks like Brad Pitt's character is a proper F1 driver and like not retired, and he's old. So like, he's old for an F1 driver. So
yeah,
I'm curious to see how they're going to explain that. You know?
They're usually these young 20-year-olds. Drive to Survive, for those who haven't dived
great
in.
Great show, Jesus.
Is an incredible show, and it basically set a new chapter
100%.
In television, which is the sports biopic. And I want to talk about this later when we talk about TV shows, because everyone is getting a Drive to Survive type show.
Yeah, golf,
and
tennis,
they're all good.
They're
so
all really
I want
good
to talk
now.
About Sprint, which is about sprinters.
I need to watch that. Yeah, it's on my list.
Especially ahead of the Olympics. So we'll get into that later. Even something down to the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders.
Oh, yeah, we
and
talked
I want
about
to talk
that.
About
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
So we're going to get into that later. Cool. Next one.
Shame. This is a bit of a more somber note, but like three great figures died this week. Hey, did you guys see that Shannon Doherty died, Shelley Duvall died, and Simmons?
Didn't realize Shannon. I saw Kevin Smith did a post, but I didn't actually read the text.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, a lot of people seem to have been dying recently.
Yeah, it sucks, man, because like Shelley Duvall, I've always felt as a very underrated actress.
Let's just talk about
olive
her
oil
specifically.
From Papa, and but like her best work was with Robert Altman for me.
and The Shining.
Yeah, Shining, I feel like, because a lot of people talk about how she was abused by Kubrick on that set.
All the takes she had to do.
Yeah, she's like awful. So like, yeah, it really sucks about that one. That one like really hurt.
Yeah, she was the main mom partner figure in The Shining.
But her, if you want to see her best work, definitely Robert Altman films. Three women in particular. Amazing performance.
I know the name Robert Altman. I'm not sure I've seen
he
all
did,
the work.
Player is one of the greatest.
The Player is one of the best movies about making movies ever.
I love Shortcuts as well.
Shortcuts is amazing. Nashville is amazing.
Gosford Park, was that his?
Yeah. McCabe and Mrs. Miller, one of the most influential westerns ever made. Okay. Incredible filmmaker. His use of dialogue and or sound and dialogue. People talk over a lot. The Long Goodbye as well is an amazing film. He's a great filmmaker.
Lovely. Do you have any more, Gad?
Did you guys see that The Acolyte has been getting a bit more love, which is nice? I made it work.
The TV show on Disney Plus, The Acolyte.
Yeah, I need to carry on.
Which
man.
Came out to mixed reviews, is now garnering a bit more faith.
So I was very iffy, and it's now like
it's gotten better.
They talk a lot about the Rashomon effect.
Seeing
scenes from different perspectives.
Yeah.
And how like they're differently construed differently from different people, and I'm like I'm getting it now.
Okay,
so there's one more episode left.
How many are they on now?
Seven. Okay, was
so
just done.
I stopped at four, so I need to carry on.
Yeah. So episode seven is like the inverse of episode three.
Okay. Okay.
So it's cool. Like a mirror of that, and you see the Jedi's perspective. And
wait, episode three was the cringy
one. But it's cringy because it's from the girl's perspective.
Oh, that's
and
true.
They're young.
Okay.
And like a lot of stuff, like in hindsight, you're going back and going, okay, it is cringy, but like it's supposed to be cringy. And
yeah. Okay, fair enough.
So has it now been revealed that this is the narrative device of the show? So perhaps in the beginning, people didn't know the plan, but now they're seeing the plan.
That's very
intriguing.
And
it's now being appreciated.
So a few people are still like, I see what they're doing, but I don't think it's great. I think it's clever. I'm really appreciating it now.
And this is a Star Wars show, and just for those who've missed it.
I appreciate it because I know you're a big Star Wars fan. So like that piques my interest now, because a lot of the people who are whinging about it are just angry incel neckbeards, you know, who are like,
oh, women perspective in Star Wars. No, thank you.
I think what people are not enjoying about the show is that the show's critical of the Jedi.
Oh, I get you.
But I mean,
okay,
if you've seen episode 1, 2, and 3, you know the Jedi aren't perfect.
Yeah,
and they 100%. Kidnap kids and train them, take them from their families. It's like the Jedi are not like the perfect organization by any means. It's a criticism of religion. And
it adds a complex layer to it. I dig that. Cool, yeah, okay. I'll definitely check it out.
Hey, did you guys see the trailer for Bando Stone and the New World?
What? Is that a country rock band?
It's such a weird fucking name. Bando Stone and the New World.
No.
It's Childish Gambino. So
oh,
Donald
cool.
Glover, it's his directorial debut.
That's cool.
So you haven't seen it?
No.
Did he not workshop the title at all?
It's weird. And I was hoping whether you guys could confirm whether or not it's based on something. But
that's cool.
Looks refreshingly unique.
Well,
it looks wildly unique and new.
Didn't he direct a few episodes for Atlanta? I think he did.
Sure. I mean, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah. And so I think he's brilliant.
Donald Glover, we know, well, at least I know
him
the most from Community.
Yeah.
He's Troy from Community, but he then went on to be Childish Gambino, who's a very celebrated
musician. Rapper, yeah.
Great. Friends of mine, funny enough, who went to NYU, who stayed in the dorm, had him as their dorm leader.
That's very cool.
That's their like claim to fame.
That's
and they were
very
like,
cool.
He was the nicest guy.
Yeah, he seems like such a cool dude.
And they said they saw him on the street once, years later, once he was on Community.
Yeah.
And he stopped and knew them and remembered them and was a nice guy.
No,
he seems
like a rad
like,
dude.
It's those little encounters or sort of references that are cool.
Yeah.
And then you realize that Childish Gambino is very much a character.
Oh, 100%.
You know, this really intriguing commentary on blackness and American politics. It's
well, this
very
is America
smart.
Was like
sure,
one of the best music deranged lunatic.
How he dresses, how he acts, how the dance works. But it's very smart, because then when you watch Donald Glover as Donald Glover do stand-up comedy, and I know there was a Netflix special, he's
really
a bit of a dorky dude.
Yeah.
He's like wearing like Converse and jeans.
I know one of the characters in 30 Rock is based on him because he was a writer, I think, on 30 Rock as well.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and one of the characters is actually inspired by him, so they wrote...
Check out the trailer for Bando Stone.
That's cool. How did I miss that?
And jeez. I really hope it could see a cinema release.
Yeah.
At least here in South Africa.
Do you know who's distributing it or producing it?
So I paused on the trailer to see what studio names, but it's all quite indie. So nothing major, which gives me the indication whether or not it might filter down to one of the distributors of South Africa. But we'll see whether maybe picks it up. But it's bizarre. You're not quite even sure what the movie is about. But he sort of plays kind of himself as Childish Gambino.
Okay, cool.
So he's like the singer.
Yeah.
And he's trapped on like an island with someone in this kind of post-apocalyptic world.
That sounds awesome.
But it also seems like it could be this digital illusion.
Okay.
Where there's a woman who's kind of fending.
Who else is in it of note?
No one that I can recognize.
Okay.
But there's this woman who's like surviving in this kind of Mad Max-y sort of type post-apocalyptic world. And it looks like everyone else is dead or gone. And then when he meets up with her, he sort of realizes he's kind of useless. All he can do is sing.
Yeah.
So it looks cool.
Sick, man.
Okay.
So he's apparently also doing a version of Lando for Star Wars.
Oh, that's cool. Lando Calrissian. I thought he was a great piece of casting as Lando for me personally.
What is a TV show?
So it was going to be a movie and a TV show. There's a lot of Star Wars projects that they announced and just no one actually knows what's happening.
Yeah.
But he could be a great Lando.
Yeah. It'll probably be a limited series on Disney Plus.
Mm.
Most likely. Okay. Let's get into it in terms of films.
Yes.
Let's start with Long Legs.
Okay.
Which is a film I saw coming quite a while away. I don't have much context of the filmmaker, of the film, other films that he's made. And I just noticed that it looked like it was going to be a Bioscope movie. And it took people like you, Perrin, and other friends, shout out to Manus, a few other guys that I know, who were like, this is special, this is different, this is smart, this should be a Bioscope movie.
Yeah.
So took a swing on it. We had ourselves a sold-out screening over the weekend, which was lovely.
Yeah.
We didn't have actually the space, funny enough, to do many screenings of it just because we had such a great weekend. It was so lovely.
Yeah.
But one of the cherries on top of the cake on Saturday was the fact that we had the sold out screening.
Yeah.
So it definitely has a place, an audience,
it's got
love.
An appeal. 100%.
So what is the context of this movie? Who is Osgood Perkins?
Okay, so Osgood Perkins is Anthony Perkins' son. So if people aren't familiar, that's Norman Bates in Psycho.
So the Alfred Hitchcock Psycho.
Yeah.
Which is at one point in the movie really just like two people.
Yeah, it's
the woman and then the guy who lives in the house.
Yeah, so it's just one person.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Well, certainly not the third, but we definitely know two people were in the movie, which was the main woman and then old Norman Bates.
Yeah, yeah. And
spoiler alert. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so that was his dad.
Yeah, so that was his dad. And also, if you are familiar with Legally Blonde, he was the weird, nerdy guy that Reese Witherspoon, like, when he's talking to girls and she's like, you were the best sex I've ever had. You know, remember that scene? He's that nerdy guy. I can't remember the character's name.
Could play Lurch.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%, right?
Okay, so this is Osgood Perkins.
Osgood Perkins, right? So he has been making like these really interesting horror films for a few years now. This is his fourth film. First film was Black Coat's Daughter, or his title, but he prefers February, which is a great mystery occult satanic horror.
It has a few names.
Known as Black Coat's Daughter, but I think in some regions in Europe it's known as February, which I think is a more fitting title if you watch the movie.
Interesting.
And then he did a movie on Netflix which is very polarizing. All of his films are very polarizing, but this one's called I'm the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House. It's like a ghost story kind of vibe.
And that's on Netflix.
A very polarizing, slow burn, gorgeous film. I really enjoyed that. Then he did Hansel and Gretel, which is his obviously spin on that
story,
folklore tale, which I wasn't the biggest fan of, but I see what he was doing. And you can see from that film where his style started to adjust more to mainstream audiences.
Okay.
So his first two films have often gets critiqued for being, people don't like them because they're either too slow or he doesn't provide enough answers, right?
Okay, but they're generally scary thriller horror movies.
Black Coat's Daughter is like proper unsettling for me. One of his biggest perks is his atmosphere is phenomenal, even in Long Legs, despite what you may say about the final, you know, if he stuck the landing or not.
Yeah, we'll get to your critique of it, but yeah. But
atmosphere
is
incredible. But I mean, that's what I love about his first two films is that he is very, I don't want to say vague, but he doesn't provide all the answers. He doesn't spoon feed the audience.
Well, that's
what I mean?
Always going to be an interesting challenge is whether or not a filmmaker, when it's time to give you something, when it's time to not. And it goes the same for sexiness. It goes the same for humor. It goes the same for everything, which is like, you know, you don't just appear naked or you don't just give the punchline.
Yeah.
You've got to give the right amount at the right time.
And that's what I appreciate about those first two films, especially Black Coat's Daughter, is the replay value is exponential for me. Like Black Coat's Daughter, first time I watched it, I liked it. Didn't really appreciate it as much as I wanted to. Second time I watched it, it like blew me away because it's just the mystery of it, the writing, the structure, it's just so smart. And it's proper like unsettling, like it's a fucked up movie.
Interesting. You know? But this is what's also very interesting is that you are enjoying and craving something that is unsettling. Oh. That's also an interesting one. And I think people, there is a demand for that. There is a want for that because we had a sold out screening. Yeah. So here comes Long Legs, which is in cinemas now. This stars Nicolas Cage.
Yes, as Long Legs. The boogeyman of the movie, so
quick
to speak.
Back of the box is that it's about a serial killer and it's about a woman finding a serial killer.
But she finds out that she has a connection to the serial killer, like a personal connection. So that pushes her to try find him even harder, you know what I mean? But with Long Legs, for me personally, so let's get into the critique of it, right? So what I think hurt Long Legs in the long run is the marketing. The marketing was ingenious. It was proper unsettling, proper scary. Like they would have billboards with Long Legs. So it's Long Legs, if you want to get a vibe of what it's going for, it's like a satanic mix of Silence of the Lambs and Seven and Zodiac, right?
Okay.
So there's the FBI agent, like Clarice Starling in Silence of the Lambs, hunting a killer who seems to be obsessed with her because he leaves notes for her and stuff. So, you know, and the notes are all cryptic, like the Zodiac or Seven or whatever.
So it's kind of like the best of all these films.
And Osgood Perkins even said, like, the film wears its influences on its sleeve. So, like, it's set during the time where these great serial killer movies were coming out in the 90s, you know, Seven and Silence of the Lambs, namely, right?
Cool.
So these, like, so what the film does is the marketing, like I said, there were billboards with the cryptic messages and it would send people to a phone number and they'd phone the phone number and Nicolas Cage would be on the other end speaking to them, you know, not obviously him in real time. It'd be wild. But like, the marketing, the trailers, everything was so well done. They did the most in not showing Nicolas Cage at all. Even in the movie, for the most part, it takes him a while before they fully show this character that he's playing. He's this weird T-Rex obsessed, the band, not the species of dinosaur,
the band.
So like he's this weird camp, like super like creepy like villain. And the thing is, the movie does such a good job setting stuff up, and then it gets to the third act where it feels like I said, Osgood Perkins been adapting his style to more mainstream audiences, right? So he kept a lot of his style from before, but then the third act, it feels like he over explains.
So it was as if someone came to him and said, "Listen, I think we need to dumb this down, or we need to make it more accessible."
Perhaps
for you as the real like diehard horror fan, you're smarter.
Yeah,
you're perhaps smarter and more versed than most audiences because you've watched far more obscure, far more unsettling. So perhaps for you, it wasn't as potent a cocktail as you wish, where other audiences might appreciate it.
Well, that's the thing, though. It's like the after the screening, like, me and Kira turned to each other, and she's like, did you feel the twist wasn't really worth it? And I was like, yeah, it felt like it was like a, is that it? You know what I mean?
Sure.
And okay. I feel like if he packaged that final act in a different manner, where like there were more questions on the table rather than answers, I think it would have landed better. And I feel like he also ended the film on the last, he ended the film on the wrong moment.
Okay.
There was a moment where I'm like, cool, cut to black, that's it. And that then it cuts to something else. And I was like, shit. But like after the screening, like there were a few people that I recognized at the screening and stuff. And like a lot of them resonated. They were like, that was fucked up. That was amazing. I loved it. And that's what matters, right? So like for me personally, it's not as fucked up as The Black Coat's Daughter or as clever as The Black Coat's Daughter.
Just hear your words. It's like you're craving fucked up.
Yeah.
You're craving this unsettling.
Yeah. So it is still unsettling. It's an unsettling movie.
Perhaps you've got a bigger appetite. Yeah. But what we like here is to have other customers come and return stuff.
Yeah.
And so I know a good friend of ours, Monet, came to the Bioscope on Saturday. To watch it, and I see him walking towards the video store right now, and I think he might be returning long legs. Let's hear what he has to say.
Hi guys, it's Monet here, and I'm returning long legs. We watched it on Saturday night at the Bioscope, and unfortunately, I thought that the movie was just okay. I really tried to stay out of the hype cycle going into the film and kind of keep my expectations low, but unfortunately, it still kind of disappointed me. I thought that the build-up and the atmosphere of the film was great. It was channeling something very similar to Seven initially. But then in the third act, the film kind of deviates and ends up in a place that I don't feel made a lot of sense given the pieces that they were building up and given the kind of direction that the film was moving in. I did think that the film had some creepy moments in it. And I thought that the acting overall was great from everybody involved, especially it's always a treat seeing old Nicolas Cage doing his thing in a weird role. He was channeling some weird rock star vibe there. So there was a lot of really good elements to the film, but unfortunately, I don't think it came together in the way that I was hoping. Maybe on a rewatch, it will be a little bit better. But that's my thoughts on Long Legs. Thanks.
Thank you, Monet.
Yeah, I agree with him. 100%. No, like he said, he mentioned that he thinks it might appreciate on value for a rewatch for him.
Yeah.
I agree.
Osgood Perkins seems to be that guy.
That's the thing though, right? Like I said, those other films I mentioned, I appreciated them. I liked them the first time, loved them the second time. You know what I mean?
So maybe he's just that kind of filmmaker that needs more time. Let's get on to other twists. Hey, what a segue. Let's talk about Twisters, which we watched in IMAX in all its sound and visual glory.
Yeah.
This is effectively a reboot of the 90s tornado movie. It's got nothing to do with Helen Hunt and all of them.
It
would have been nice if they'd set in the same universe. They could have. But it's effectively a relook. And it's all about tornadoes, and it is about a young woman who is a climatologist, studier person, who seems to have a natural knack and love for tornadoes. The movie starts with a rather tragic incident with her friends while studying tornadoes as students. But now cut to her years later, where she gets brought in to help with the project and meets a dreamy guy.
Oh, Glenn Powell.
Glenn Powell in all his dreaminess. it's a great film in that sense.
It's a fun popcorn movie.
It's a great popcorn movie. And I think something to perhaps kick off the discussion is something Cole whispered to me in my ear during the movie, which I appreciated, which was, it feels like we're watching a movie from the 90s.
It does, 100%.
And I really love that. It's made by Steven Spielberg's company.
Yeah.
these are the people behind
Amblin, yeah.
Jurassic Park, yeah. and all those movies
What's
from the 90s.
$200 million budget.
Wild. And I want to get into that because it didn't feel CGI-y, but obviously it had loads of it because there was all this destruction.
What, you're telling me those aren't real tomatoes? If just, it was Christopher Nolan, he'd be like, no, we're getting in that tornado,
well,
man.
The crew just like sitting around for months waiting for a tornado to happen. Yeah,
they'll figure out a way to make it.
Yeah, they made this. It took them 20 years to make it.
She made a little one on her like scale model things.
So yeah, make it own. They got the science. Yeah,
but yeah, it was quite simple in that regard. But yeah, it was fun.
I really loved the whole YouTube video aspect of Glenn Powell's character.
Oh yeah, I dug.
So
that
he
as
was
well.
Yeah okay. So Glenn Powell's character comes onto the scene initially as this very brash, arrogant bad guy. You sort of see him as the negative and antagonist of the film. He runs a YouTube channel and they sort of are doing everything seemingly bad about that culture of tornado chasing.
Yeah, there's a lot of yee-hoo, whee-hoo, the whole movie.
It is a painfully American in that regard. Where they're shooting fireworks into the tornado.
They might as well have been shooting guns in the air the whole time.
Where our character... who is the woman who is in the Where the Crawdads Sing film?
Yes, Daisy Edgar Jones. She was in Normal People.
I recognized her and I was like, where do I know this woman from? Our main character. Mm. And I realized that she was the lead in Where the Crawdads Sing, which is a completely different movie.
Yeah.
In many ways. And she's got dark hair in that movie. So that's why you can't recognize it. Yeah. But she thinks she's doing good and research and helping. And he's a menace. Mm. And then what is quite smart, and I don't want to give too much away, but there's a nice little twist, so to speak. Oh, Jesus. In our characters.
They were dead the whole time.
and it's fun.
Yeah. What do you think, Ed?
Yeah, I mean, I knew it was going to be stupid going into it. I had very low expectations, but it was fun. I definitely enjoyed myself. The music was very loud and subtle.
What? Well, where were you seated?
He was a little bit behind us.
Oh, did Colden drag you to the front?
I can't do two.
Yeah, same, dude. Flip.
I was right in the front, and it was.
You did that to us in Furiosa, and we were like, fuck.
I did Cole position again.
Okay.
For Twisters. And what we're talking about
is... I was
two
rows in front of you.
Oh, yes. I saw you
with all the leg space.
Yeah.
What we're talking about is where the optimal place to sit is in the IMAX theater. And Cole has insisted that we're in the first block, which is right in the front. Not the very, very front.
I get why, though.
This is one or two rows from the back of the first block.
Yeah.
And I did it again. And I kind of regretted it this time. No, I was like, I actually, because
Perrin's got the right idea.
Yeah.
You two sat further back. And I was like, next time, I'm going to insist we sit further back.
Where you sit, we're sitting is the closest I'd sit. That's
so it's like lots of leg room. But the point is, as soon as you go behind, it starts leveling up.
Yeah.
So the problem is, if the people that are in front, that's like a meter ahead, you see their heads.
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
So it just
doesn't
raise. So there's just a little disadvantage. I think one or two back from that middle section front is.
That's your row that you're sitting in is the one I would force myself into. But generally at IMAX, is row G and H is like perfect. Right. Dead center.
Middle of the middle.
Cole's logic, I definitely see where he's coming from. He's like, where I sit, he's like, oh, but that's like when you sit at home in front of your TV. Like, it's the same
too far
kind of screen.
Like, the screen is too far
away.
Yeah,
he's like, it's like you might as well watch it at home, right? So he wants to feel like he's at an IMAX theater.
Where pretty much in every direction you look, you see a screen.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I get it.
Insane person.
I have enjoyed...
Up is the problem.
I have enjoyed all those things, but... Okay, I get it. Another thing to talk about quick is Quiet Place Day One.
Okay.
Which I watched at the distributors.
I know you're not a huge fan.
Well, I never watched the other ones, to be honest.
Really?
No.
Oh, come on.
No. So have you seen Day One?
I loved all of them. So
the first one was great.
The first one was great. I preferred the second one.
Really?
Yeah. So second one, I was like, oh, it's not as good as the first one. Watched it again, loved it more.
Huh.
But first one was great. But what I loved about, have you seen the new one?
I haven't seen the new one.
So what I liked about the new one is it genuinely felt like a quiet place. The other films, it didn't feel like they were trying too hard to be quiet. Like the element was there, you know, they had the sign. So are you familiar with the
other ones? Yeah, I know the idea. So the first one we ever got was A Quiet Place, yeah, where our world had been established,
yeah,
right, that there were
these invaders
these
from
invaders
outer space.
Invaders from yeah. outer space that prey on you based on sound.
Yeah.
And so everyone has to keep quiet.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, the first one, they had clever little things where, you know, like...
But did it start with it all being established?
No. So that's one thing I like about The Quiet Place, even in this new one, is one of your things is that you wanted answers. Like,
a little bit.
Like a little bit of context, right, on yeah. where these things came from. Personally, I don't think we need answers. I think okay. the mystery of them just being there is, like, more compelling. Like, I don't particularly care about that because the characters are more interesting. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
So the one thing I want to say about Quiet Place Day One is that they worked very hard at giving as much story, context, and humanity to our main
yeah.
characters.
Yeah.
So this movie starts as a small little personal, like, cancer film.
Well, I mean,
it starts as a personal drama.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's like fucking aliens just burst in from the sky and then start fucking eating people.
So
you do care and love your character. You do get a sense of her. This is played by Lupita Nyong'o.
Yeah.
And then the Oki from Stranger Things shows up.
Well, they're actually dating, which is interesting.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So there is this beautiful human story, but yeah. then you're like, fucking these aliens come out of nowhere all the yeah. time, and like it kind of in a way kind of ruins this beautiful story.
So that's the interesting,
so I don't give a shit about
it. I get you.
It left me quite cold. It's a little bit like, and sorry to go back to Twisters,
yeah,
there were too many fucking tornadoes in Twisters. Like, do we get that many fucking tornadoes?
No. But that's all. Twisters are stupid. It's dumb
and
fun. You
and
know?
They justify.
Twisters, yeah. Russell.
I know. But literally, but maybe I'm wrong. Because once I remember in a movie seeing this kind of lightning sky.
Yeah.
And going like, that's bullshit. I've never seen that much lightning.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
We are in Joburg and we get a lot of lightning, you know?
And then I once yeah. looked in the sky and was like, oh my God,
lightning,
look
dude.
At that. It's like crack, yeah. crack,
yeah.
crack, 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 crack. And I was like, oh my God, this fucking does happen. Yeah. So maybe I'm wrong, but in my head I was like, how many fucking tornadoes do we actually get in Tornado Alley?
Look, yeah. I think they kind of cut out the parts in between where the tornadoes weren't.
Yeah,
there,
sure, that would make a shit movie with them just sitting around waiting.
But during tornado season, I think there are like 5 or 6 within like a couple.
Yeah, it's
of
called
weeks.
Tornado Alley for a reason. Yeah. Like, it's
but I mean,
nuts.
They keep on building there. Yeah. yeah.
There was a great.
Hold on.
There was a great comedian that was like, you know, you keep hearing people complain like, we got hit by a tornado.
Yeah,
and he's like, just move.
It's exactly.
It's called Tornado Alley. Like, it's in the name.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's not even that hard. Your house is on wheels.
Yeah, no, for sure. But do you know what's interesting? Like, those two films, it's interesting because, like, with Quiet Place, you're like, you know, it's this intimate cancer story, right? And the director who did that, he did a movie called Pig with Nicolas Cage.
Still need to watch that.
Yeah. Amazing
that's
film.
Amazing.
And that was packaged as a vengeance film because his... Nicolas Cage plays a truffle hunter, like a truffle
the
hunter
mushrooms,
guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and his pig gets stolen.
Yeah.
And he goes looking for these guys. So it's packaged yeah. as a vengeance thriller.
Yeah.
But the film is an intimate drama about grief and like loneliness. And yeah. it's just gorgeous. He should have gotten an Oscar nomination for that. And then you also Twisters. Opposite ends of the spectrum where I was talking to you before, I'm like, I cannot believe Lee Isaac Chang, the guy who did Minari, did Twisters.
Yeah.
And he makes these intimate family dramas. These
but
intimate,
I think that's a classic Hollywood trope where
it's wild.
You get this sort of celebrated indie favorite yeah. and then Hollywood goes like, hey man, you want to look at this check.
I mean, look what Chloe Zhao did.
Look how big
Eternals.
This check
yeah.
is.
Eternals. What it's, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and she hasn't really bounced back from that. Which
it is
sucks.
Hard and it can suck these filmmakers up. I know
yeah.
that Michelle Gondry got given way too much with Green Hornet.
Yeah.
And it
oh,
kind
geez.
Of
it, so disappointing.
I was personally able to kind of witness his
downfall.
His downfall,
yeah.
his mental break, because we were meant to have him come out for our exhibition.
Yes, I
we
remember
got
that.
His permission
yeah.
and license to do his home movie factory in
yeah.
2012. And he was, I got sent his passport. We bought his first class ticket.
Amazing.
He was going to come. And 2 weeks out, his assistant was like, he's basically lost his mind.
Shame, man.
And I'm quitting because he's getting violent.
Yeah, we haven't seen him.
And it was because, since, like, here was this beautiful indie punk rock kind of mind that just got given way too much. It wasn't actually Green Hornet that did it. There was this bigger French production, which was an adaptation of a very famous book that was going to have the most famous. It was going to have the woman from Amelie in it, Audrey Tautou. This other famous French, and there was just too much riding on it. And I think he just lost his mind
under pressure.
It's interesting that sometimes these people can grow into it, like Greta Gerwig. Imagine fucking out on Barbie, but she didn't. She owned it. It just shows you even more what an accomplishment Barbie was.
I'm happy to see now is there's the toxic director thing is starting to. I mean, it's still around, but like it's starting to go away. By the way, it's starting to go away now. It sucks. But Kubrick, for example, right? You see how he treated Shelley Duvall on The Shining. You know, that's like toxic work behavior. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even though he's trying to get the best performance, it's still not a good excuse. You know what I mean? But like you look at like someone like Greta Gerwig, where you always hear about what a collaborative, exciting, fun experience it is working with her. Mm. And even though she's probably stressing out, she goes to work making sure that everyone has fun and like enjoys the process.
You got it. Yeah,
and that feels like with Michel Gondry, it just sounds like he started to hate the process. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of directors where they openly admit they hate being on set, but they love being in post production. You know?
Yeah. It's like you should be an editor, man.
Yeah. So like, it's interesting to see like, what has Michel Gondry done since? He's like just
he did that show with Jim Carrey.
Yes. Yeah.
Was it called Knowing?
No.
It sort of came in.
Happy. Yeah. It was something. Yeah. It was
something word. Ing.
Yeah.
Something ing.
But yeah, let's move on.
Cool.
So, little fact about X-Men, Wolverine and Deadpool.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So when
that's coming soon? It's coming at the end of
July 26th.
So it's like 2 weeks.
And the Bioscope is going to take it in week 2.
Oh, cool.
So in the second week, so that's the first weekend of August.
Yeah.
The Bioscope's going to do it.
Sick.
It's going to be fun. And I'm going to tell you some of my plans.
Sure.
But yeah, give us the facts.
So Bryan Singer handled the first X-Men movie.
Yeah.
And on set, they were banned from reading comics, which I find ridiculous. So stupid.
Yeah.
So at the time, Kevin Feige wasn't an official producer. Mm. He'd kind of just been brought on and he was an associate producer. And apparently, he was the one who kind of got Hugh Jackman to get the role because someone else was cast and he got into an accident and then Hugh Jackman ended up doing it. The two of them would go spend time in Kevin Feige's office reading X-Men comics. Illegally, like off the
cuff. That's so cool.
So this new Wolverine that's coming is not the same Wolverine as what was in those movies. He's wearing like the original yellow,
the iconic yellow. Yeah.
And it's like,
when they made the original X-Men's, the Bryan Singer, big budget X-Men, which was really our first.
Talk about a problematic filmmaker.
But sure, those were our first superhero movies. Yeah. That was like the prologue. What comes first? Prologue.
Prequel?
Epilogue? Prologue.
Prologue. I think it is prologue.
Prologue is first. That was our intro, our appetizer, let's talk in food analogies, to what then became the big era of superhero films.
I think it was just before Spider-Man, the Sam Raimi.
It was around the same time. So interestingly and this just shows you the era, right, is that they were making these huge budget, big, bold movies, but not honoring source material.
Yeah.
And now we are painstakingly in the complete other way of doing things, which is like, if it is an Asian story, it has to be an Asian director. If it is a woman story,
which is good,
has to be a woman director.
Yeah, it's good.
There's like, we're in the era of representation now. We're in the era of the importance of that. I've mentioned this before. 10 years ago, I was in film school, and that was always the debate. Mm. Why is Taye Diggs coming and playing an African character? Why is the white guy telling the black guy story? We were all criticizing that till eventually it has to be the way.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing because these products are authentic and they are true and it resonates and Black Panther does fucking well.
Yeah.
You know?
Because like, people feel seen, which is important.
Yeah, and it's done in a way that's even subtle sometimes.
But that's why, like, 2 weeks ago we talked about that film I Saw the TV Glow, that queer horror film.
Yeah.
And it's made by a trans filmmaker, and it... Because the film is a trans allegory, people felt seen. So that's why they're resonating with it.
Yeah.
And despite you not liking the movie or liking Jane Schoenbrunn's films, you have to admit that they're making vitally important films because people feel seen. You know what I mean?
No, and it's Inside Out 2 had to be made by a woman because
although
they haven't gendered the problems too much. They've kept it as open for
universal, 100%.
And universal, like, it's still a young girl.
Yeah.
And it just had to be told by a girl.
Yeah, exactly.
So, interesting. What else is there to talk about? Should we get on to TV shows?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I'm finally watching Fallout. I'm a bit late to the party.
Oh, cool.
We got halfway through the first episode, fell asleep, and we never went back. But I was enjoying it.
That's what happened to me. I was getting tired, so I turned it off. Yeah. But I finished episode 2 yesterday.
So did you ever play the games?
My brother loved the game. So, yeah, he said the show's cool.
Fallout is on Amazon
Prime. Yeah.
Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
Yeah. And are you liking it, Gaz?
Yeah, it's great. It's just like, I love the idea of post-apocalyptic worlds, like Mad Max theoretically.
I love that shit, yeah, same.
And it's like the opposite of where Blast from the Past would have gone.
No.
Because they like went underground thinking that all this was going to happen and they got up, everything was fine.
Yeah.
But this is like, they're just living this totally like... blocked off world, and they come out and everything is insane, and they're like, "Yeah, you should go back into the vaults."
Yeah.
So Fallout is all about future apocalyptic people coming out of
The Cold War Fallout did actually
happen.
The
Cold War happened and the nukes actually landed. Yeah, and the world's been destroyed, and these people have been living in a vault for like hundreds of years, right?
And each version of the game is a different vault.
So there's like one is in Vegas, and I don't know where the third. So there's like five games, okay. I think.
So there's a lot of meat on the bone for the TV
show. Yeah, and
it could almost be an anthology, right? So season 1 could be this vault.
Yeah.
People coming out, and then they could make season 2 somewhere else in the world.
So. Yeah.
So the main idea of the first season is that someone's broken into this vault where we introduced and kidnaps this girl's father. So she has to go out into the world to try to find her father. And
it's Carl McLaughlin, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sick. I love Carl.
This is making me think of Love and Monsters.
I loved Love and Monsters.
Which is
one of the most
underrated
gems. American director.
I know. Yeah.
Great
South
film.
African filmmaker, man. Yeah. But it's one of the most underrated
gems
on Netflix.
Eh?
Jonathan Nolan.
No. Love and Monsters.
He was the guy behind Five Fingers for Marseille.
Yeah, okay. He directed that. And it's, I think it's on Netflix.
Because Fallout is directed by Christopher Nolan's brother.
Yeah, Jonathan Nolan.
Yeah, I'm talking about Love and Monsters.
Yeah. Okay.
Love and Monsters is a great fun,
yeah,
awesome
great movie.
I
think I've seen it.
I think you'll dig it. It's like a cool, fun monster movie. It's like really fun, yeah.
It is the funnest watch.
It's like a fun adventure movie.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
It's just so well made.
Yeah.
Can we talk about America's Sweethearts?
Yes, we can.
This is the Netflix docuseries about the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders.
Yeah.
And it could very easily be a dumb, vacuous... kind of silly show about chickies being cheerleaders.
Yeah.
But it's about something more. And I think the substance of it gives it more reason to watch.
Mm.
At the end of the day, it does play out very light. It is about this one season of women auditioning to become Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders. But why it's important is you come to realize that they... are the most famous cheerleaders, right? You don't know of any other cheerleaders, right?
I mean, I barely know them.
Exactly. Yeah. but it's a thing. It's a knowledgeable, the world kind of knows about them. This is America's sport, American football. It very much embodies America. You've got a very famous team, the Dallas Cowboys, very interestingly named as Cowboys.
Yeah.
And now you've got this famous tradition of these cheerleaders doing like a very famous dance to a very famous song. There's tradition. It's all about tradition. These women embody the beauty of America.
Yeah.
The perfection of America. And so a lot rides on the shoulders of these like young, kind of silly, but very talented athlete women to embody this huge expectation. And that's what makes the show kind of interesting.
What year is it set in?
No, in the last year of the audition. So it was the woman that became...
Is it reality TV?
Yeah, it's a docu-series. Oh, okay. So it follows them. They put their body through like an incredible amount to do.
Yeah, cheerleading's hard, dude.
It's not... it's a gymnast kind of job. But I just found that interesting that you've got the idea of what America finds beautiful is an interesting question. How many of them are white? How many of them are black? How many are Hispanic? How are they represented? What do they have to live up to? What do they have to do? It's interesting. And there's one girl who's like the sweetest like Southern girl who like...
Southern Belle.
Yeah, and she just loves Jesus. And like this whole thing about like it's so interesting how they've made these choices to represent her because and they know what they're doing because the filmmakers and editors are smart people.
Yeah.
And she says something like, she comes from pageants. And so she can, you know, do certain gymnastics and dancing, and there's this great moment where she's like, I just want to use, you know, my what God gave me, and I want to share that with the world. And then it cuts to her like shaking her ass, like, because you know they dance quite seductively. Yeah. They do gymnast, but at the end of the day they also are representing sexuality and
100%
their bodies desire, and they are wearing these like skimpy little fucking
bikinis,
outfit. And it's just so well cut where she's like, I want to use what God gave me to share joy in the world. And it just cuts to her like,
I just know the editor was like, I know, like, as soon as she said that, he's like, okay, we're looking for this footage. There it is.
Exactly. No, and she's got this like one boyfriend who is this like very av looking dude.
Of course, yeah.
And it's her first boyfriend, and they go
and
they're gonna get married, and it's just like and you just look at this dude and you're like, bro, you are punching so far above your... It's like you have got no idea like what you're sitting with.
Yeah.
But it's funny. It was an easy watch. It was fun.
I love it. I love a good easy watch, you know, something I can eat and watch. You know?
Yeah. Well, the other one that's good, which we started this weekend, is called Sprint.
That looks cool.
As I said earlier, this is the Netflix... docu-series about a particular sport to give you context, to give you characters, because real-world beautiful television is playing out in real time.
Yeah.
And if you have a really good show like Drive to Survive, it can bolster the economy of these sports. The whole of F1 has changed
because
and
of that
developed.
Show. It's crazy.
New races have been added in America because America has taken an interest in F1 because of Drive to Survive.
Yeah,
because
they're not driving in a circle.
Yeah,
NASCAR. You're just turning left for.
out of all the sports, it makes sense that this one came first. It makes sense that this one did well because there are only so many seats in Formula One.
Yeah,
NFL is fucking massive.
Yeah, it's huge. So college football in particular.
The quarterback docuseries just focused on three quarterbacks, which was an interesting one. Now they've made receiver, which is they're now trying to get to the other aspects of the game.
Have you seen Last Chance U?
No.
That's phenomenal.
What sport is that?
It's football. Okay. It's one of the best college football clubs in America, and it follows how these kids balance school with actually playing football.
Yeah, well, these Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders hardly get paid because it's 1 year of their life. It's a great sort of tradition and notoriety and all of that, but they have to have other jobs, so these women are like teachers and salespeople and studying, and it's very interesting.
No, you must check out Last Chance U, because it's not the big Netflix, it's not the big colleges, the main colleges. It's one of the the lower divisions. Okay. And a lot of these kids are from like, it's like a small town. They're from like downtrodden areas or whatever.
Yeah.
And they go there to hopefully get noticed by bigger colleges. So they go there. But then a lot of the times, like each season, it's like an anthology. So each season is a new class of kids.
Okay.
And there's like one particular lady who helps the kids, who is just one of the best TV characters, like not characters, TV personalities ever, because she's just a literal angel and everyone loves her and she's amazing. It's amazing such a great show.
How some people are just made for those shows. So like in Drive to Survive, there's certain characters that just people love.
The house.
Gunther.
Gunther, I love him. From Haas. Haas,
But yeah, Sprint is cool, and I think Sprint is worth watching right now on Netflix because ahead of the Olympics, it's going to be very cool to have characters so that when the Olympics happens, which is later this year,
it's soon. No, it's like end of this month.
It's the end of this month. You're going summer to recognize the Summer Olympics in Paris. You're going to know certain characters and you're going to feel them and understand them better. You're going to give a shit. They're not just going to be a person you know nothing about.
Yeah.
And so, Sprint is about the sprinters.
Yeah.
So, Sha'Carri Richardson, Noah Lyles. I, like, now know these people's names after this weekend.
That's important, though, hey? Like, because, it, like you said, it bolsters the economy of those sports.
But it gives humanity, and it just it has people give a shit. It's
exactly, yeah. Oh.
So lovely, guys.
I'm flying to Paris on the way to Germany.
Yeah, oh, Gaddy, cool. You're gonna
when are you going?
Next Wednesday.
All right. For how long?
We got 6 shows over 2 weekends.
Oh, sick.
Gaddy's going to play a tour. This is with Adventure Man.
Adventure Man.
Oh, that's
my
cool.
Solo project,
that's rad. Congrats, man.
My buddy Richard.
Cool, man.
And we're all in Berlin, and then I'm going to Amsterdam to visit my brother.
Fucking cool, man.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was in Amsterdam last week.
I want to visit this museum that you went to.
Yeah, so I want to just quickly mention that Amsterdam has got the most amazing spaces for cinema.
Yeah,
the biggest being this beautiful architectural marvel on the water front, the main canal right by Central Station, the Eye Museum.
I've heard about
it. The Eye Film Museum, which is obviously at its core cinemas. So there's 3 cinemas, which I wish I had the time while traveling to go and watch movies. They were screening Kinds of Kindness. I wish I could do it. If I was on my own, it would be a bit more possible.
Yeah. Did they screen that with Dutch subtitles?
I'm not sure. I was curious to
A friend of mine
ask.
Lives there, so she's been living there for a while. And she is Afrikaans, but like it took her a while to get used to like
the
Dutch.
Yeah.
And she said like often, like at least in the early days when she would see like a French film with Dutch subtitles, she would like struggle to understand, and now she's eventually gotten the hang of it. But like, yeah, she's. I think
it was be English with Dutch subtitles.
Yeah, I think that's the case.
I think these cinema spaces would be purists.
Yeah, for sure.
And they would screen it in the original language.
Yeah,
the French dubbed the movies.
The Germans as well. I know that. Yeah.
But the got a chance to see it. The gift shop was a dream. Just because for me, I have my own cinema gift shop here at the Bioscope, and so I took great notes on what books they had and what books even exist. You know, we don't always get the options to have these books on sale and magazines and posters and ideas. And so I loved it. And it was also great popping in to other cinemas.
Yeah.
There was
see
one
what
called
doing.
The Eight Cake.
Eight Cake, yeah.
Cool. A lot of them were student run, which is
that's
very
cool.
But there were many. There were a handful of Bioscope style cinemas, which was lovely, and I took great joy in walking in and saying, I own a cinema in Joburg, and we spoke about it, and how many screens do you have, and it was very cool. I love sort of seeing a city through
its
cinemas.
That's cool, man. I'm
I did
glad
it
you
in New York.
I
did a month in New York once as a personal trip.
Okay,
during early days.
Yeah.
And basically every day I went to a different cinema site. It just shows you how many exist in other parts of the world.
It's wild.
What I often have to do here on a Saturday when showing people the Bioscope and being a bit of a tour guide is I've got to explain to them that places like this exist.
Yeah, for sure.
And you can realize a lot of South Africans don't even have room in their brain for a cinema or a space like this. Where anyone who's lucky enough to travel to some of these bigger cities, you see them all the time.
Yeah, 100%. So,
But lekker, guys. Nice to catch up.
Yeah, nice to catch up.
Nice to have a good chat. We had a nice little healthy long chat here.
I'll see you guys when I'm back.
Yeah. Good luck with the tour, Gary.
Yeah, I'll bring you some bratwurst back.
Some bratwurst? or a stroopy.
Yeah, or leave the hosens. What's the little
That's
leather
German,
shorts?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some schnitzels.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, don't bring chicken schnitzel home. Yeah. That's going to be too much. But yeah, there's not going to be a guest episode this week.
Okay.
Because yeah, I was away. That's why we took the break. We are going to record some lovely episodes this week with guests.
Oh, cool.
But I'm not sure which one we're going to do.
Oh, I get you.
So
yeah.
I'd rather just know what's banked, know which one is the best one to do. So we won't do a guest episode this Thursday. And I also want to build a culture of like, there might not always be a guest episode.
Yeah.
Because these are tricky to sometimes coordinate and do. And I want to always have it be the best people and the best chats.
Yeah, for sure.
So let's do a quality over quantity.
Yeah.
So this week it's just this chat. But from next week, there should be some good guests.
Nice.
Which I'm excited about. Yeah. All right. Homebase is thevideostore.co.za. We do have links to some previous episodes there, as well as all our social media. Chime in with your own... Did you guys hear?
Yeah.
I think that's a nice one to do.
I wanted to do the serial killer movies that you may have missed. Shit. Okay. I missed out on that. Sorry, man.
There is still space. Let's fucking do it.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so what we also hope to do is whenever Perrin is around, are we going to try build some lists? So
yeah,
maybe
so,
let's do a quick introduce it.
Literally, so my whole vibe is I love lists. So like I want to introduce lists into people's like, if they like one movie or they're missing, they feel like it's missing something, these are movies.
Desert Island top five.
Exactly,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Okay, so let's hear it. What is your list today?
So for Long Legs, right? If you love the whole serial killer vibe stuff, but also you feel like there was missing something.
Okay.
These are five movies you may have missed that could tickle your fancy, right?
Or you should rewatch.
So we mentioned Silence of the Lambs, Zodiac 7, right? So those are no-brainers.
Yeah.
So Cure is about, it's a Japanese horror thriller film by a director named, he's got the same name as Akira Kurosawa, but it's not the same Kurosawa. And what it's about is an investigator starts finding people who show up dead with like an X scratched into their necks.
Okay.
But the murderer, he's always near the scene, but he can never remember what happened. So that's the whole premise. And it just happens. It goes from scene to scene where these people just show up dead and we don't know what's happening, right?
Okay.
Amazing. Cure, 1997, one of the best films of the 90s. Fucking phenomenal.
Okay, next one.
Peeping Tom by Michael Powell.
It's like a 60s an old movie.
Yeah.
I remember watching that at film school.
So that was like the... they effectively like ended Michael Powell's career, because if you know Michael Powell, is Powell and Pressburger, they did The Red Shoes, Tales of Hoffman, Life and Times of Criminal Blimp, all these great like colorful films, right?
Okay.
And then he goes and makes this fucked up killer movie where it's about a serial killer who films the woman that he's killing in their dying moments.
Yes.
And like he makes these like documentaries of these films, and really, really messed up film that, like, when it came out, Michael Powell was absolutely butchered for it because they were like, it's too messed up. It just, people weren't ready for it. I think it came out just before Psycho or a year after Psycho.
Okay. And these movies are going to be obscure and quite hard to find.
Yeah. So
maybe like Mubi or.
Yeah, Mubi. Cure, I think, is on Mubi. If you've got the Criterion channel, a lot of these are on there.
Okay, cool.
Then M is a German movie.
Fritz Lang.
Incredible film.
Just the letter M.
Just the letter M. 1931, silent film. It's about the criminal underworld start hunting a child killer, basically.
Oh, deep
dive.
Can
you play Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon? Does it sync up?
Yeah, totally, with Wizard of Oz. Eh? And then, so that's number three.
Number four.
House that Jack built, Lars von Trier.
Amazing.
It's fucked up.
Oh my God. With Joaquin Phoenix.
No, it's with Matt Dillon.
Yeah.
It's proper fucked up.
Under my skin.
So yeah, he's a serial killer, and the whole premise is that death has come to visit him, and like he's going over
like specific kills that he made over his lifetime.
Like, you know, he isn't doing it, but you still believe, he's not capable.
Yeah, it's proper messed up because there's like, he kills children. He kills like,
Jesus.
It's really messed up, but great film. If you love Lars von Trier and you want something fucked up, that's one to watch.
Lars von Trier is a very famous Danish filmmaker.
Yeah. And then I'll give you two for the price of one. Memories of Murder.
Yeah, I was about to say, that had to be on the list.
Bong Joon-ho, probably my favorite Bong Joon-ho film. So he did Parasite, obviously. And it's basically the Korean Zodiac.
Yes.
And it's based on a true story where these two detectives, mismatched detectives. One's a little irresponsible, like small town detective. And then there's a city detective who's like more into the science of solving mysteries and stuff. And they are hunting down a rapist murderer that's plaguing the area.
Myself and Cole did Memories of Murder and
so
Zodiac.
Incredible film, fucking hell.
We did it as and Zodiac as a double bill in COVID.
So good. So that, and interestingly enough, recently, I think 5 years ago, they found the murderer. They finally found the murderer.
Oh shit! Yeah. In Japan?
No, in Korea.
In Korea.
And he was in jail already, and he admitted to it. Like
wild.
And then last one,
because we never
found
Zodiac. Hey,
no, we never found Zodiac. They have theories of who did it. There's documentaries that tell you who did it, and they reveal, oh no, we actually don't know who did it. God. And then the last one, Man Bites Dog. Belgian.
Love that movie so
docu
much.
Like a mockumentary, really fucked up as well, like a comedy,
that was a film
black
school,
comedy.
There was a film school film that was like, oh yeah, this was the first like fucked up movie.
Yeah, it's proper fucked up.
Is it that scene when he walks in and see the lady had like heart medication? So he gives her a fright.
That's one movie where it's like so funny at the beginning, and then it like there's a point where it just becomes completely depraved, where like he starts involving the film crew in his murders and stuff like that.
Yeah, it was a very experimental, very unique film when it came out. It's black and white.
Yeah, black and white. The whole premise is that it's a film school team are making a documentary about a serial killer, and this guy kills indiscriminately as well. He kills like postmen, kills children, kills whoever, you know.
But it was a really landmark film because it came up in our film school. So Man Bites Dog.
Yeah, Man Bites
Dog. But you should only have top five, man.
I'm sorry, man. I had to throw that in because it was Memories of Murder and
one of them's
got to
go. One of them's got to go. Which one's going to go?
Memories of Murder.
All right. So you're going to put Man Bites Dog ahead of it.
Memories
of Murder is
going to
make it.
Only purely because
bonus,
I love...
Bonus edition is Man Bites Dog.
Only because I loved Memories of Murder so much. And it's my favorite Bong Joon-ho. So, yeah.
Dude. All right.
And that's my list.
That's your list. That's a great list. No, whenever you're on, I want to get a list from Perrin.
Okay,
it's the P-Dog list.
All right.
Okay, magic. Thank you for putting that together. I appreciate you.
Thanks, folks.
And I also appreciate you listening thus far. And thank you for your time while you were browsing our video store, listening to us talk shit. And just know that you can chime in. So we've got instructions on how you can give a return, like the one you heard from Mornay earlier, as well as our Hey Did You Guys See? We would love to hear you guys chime in, especially on a place like Instagram or on the Facebook group, Hey Did You Guys See? With something.
Yeah.
A trailer or news or something we should talk about. Magic.
Cool.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for your time.
Like,
nice.
Come on, Gaddy.
Hi, yeah.
There we go.
Onward to the week.
That's the spirit.
Thanks, chums.